Hello and welcome to episode the 252nd. I already screwed up the intro. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, and I'm joined today by everybody. Alex is back.
Hello.
Everybody get excited about Alex being back.
Yes.
I'm so excited you interrupted him.
Yeah, well, he wants us to know what it feels like, I guess. After 250 episodes.
You've heard Chad's voice already.
Heyo.
And Emily's here, so it's full house this week.
Hello.
Hello to everybody. We're here as always. We've got a lot of comics to talk about, which we'll get to those. How have you all been doing? How have your weeks been?
Been good.
Got my second COVID shot.
Hell yeah.
Bam, bam.
So you're like, what, 2 weeks out now from being fully immunized?
Yeah.
Nice.
A little less than. I got it on Thursday.
Okay, cool. That's exciting. Well, everyone but Alex on this show will have been fully vaxxed then.
Hey, my 4 month waiting period is medically sound.
Yep. No, it's totally.
It's not spurned on by shortages of the vaccine and necessity. It's because the doctors think that 4 months is the perfect time to get your second dose.
Huh.
Yep.
Yep. They're all saying this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone
four to five doctors.
Yeah. Four to five doctors are saying
4 months
this
is the time period.
At the same time, doctors also hate this, but it's a bit of both. So I know
whatever works, I guess.
I'm just happy that I got my first dose. So I feel I got a little bit of protection, which is
well, good. You did. I mean, that's how it works. The first dose gives you a little bit, and the second dose gives you more.
See, Jean-Luc, resident doctor,
and hopefully the second dose works as advertised. 4 months after the first dose, we'll see. Alex will be our guinea pig. We'll know.
Well, it's like whenever I miss an episode of the, you know, being on the show, I always like feel extra excited to be on again. You know, like fondness makes the heart go. And I think vaccines work the same way. We're like, hey, if you get a vaccine too close together, you're like, oh, that's great, another vaccine. I just got one of these. But if you wait 4 months between, you're like, your body's like, yes.
That's the nice thing about the flu vaccine. You get to wait a whole year between getting it.
Yeah, that's exciting.
By the time it rolls around again, you're just so fucking stoked to go have someone put a needle in your arm so you don't get sick. It rocks.
It's wonderful.
Well,
if you say so.
It's good that we're all getting vaccinated. It's good that none of us are anti-vaxxers. I like that.
Yeah.
I don't think if someone on this panel of podcast hosts was an anti-vaxxer that they would have lasted very long on the podcast.
But yeah, our friend Rio is kind of anti-vax, but it's okay, we love him.
He doesn't even listen to the show and you're digging at him.
Well, exactly, he can't even set the record
straight.
He'll
never know.
Exactly. Also, I'm sorry I compared being on the show to getting like a vaccine. Actually,
it's good.
That's a good
thing. No, it's good. That's a good thing. You're on this show and you're like,
we vaccinate secure. People it's against bad week. Comics opinions.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Sure, exactly.
Is that what we do? That's a noble way to put it.
Yep.
Yeah. You listen to this episode and then whenever you wander into the comics roundup or whatever the fucking, what's that website?
Comic book roundup. Yeah.
Comic book roundup that y'all hate.
We don't hate the site. We just hate everyone.
No, comic book roundup is a really useful tool for aggregating review scores.
It's okay. a neutral body.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I did not mean to besmirch the good name of Comics Book Roundup on this, but you have to listen to this podcast and then you go to Comic Books Roundup and then that inoculates you from all the bad reviews.
Yep, that's exactly how it works. You'll know who's fucking lying to you in the comic book press.
Yep. And you know, it's one of those things where for best practice, you should come back next week and get the next dose, but you could probably, you know, once you hear an episode and you're, you know, like, oh, like we shit on Scott Snyder, let's stay clear of Scott Snyder kind of thing. Like there is some effects that last longer, but you know, for the best source, come back weekly.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, if you hear a shit on Scott Snyder book, we're probably going to say the same thing the next time the Scott Snyder book comes out. But sometimes there's a comic where like, I don't know, the first issue sucks, the second issue rocks, and the third issue, I don't know, kind of rocks in a weird different way, and also parts of it also suck in a weird different way, but we'll get to that. But you've got to keep yourself in the know. And you've also got to keep yourself in the know about stuff that isn't comics, which I assume you people have come with content to talk about.
Yeah, content.
Content. Alex, you've been playing a video game.
Been playing Pokemon Snap.
Ooh. Yeah! Tell me all your Pokemon Snap feelings.
I like it, and I'm farther. I've unlocked 4 biomes now, so not too far. But I'm sick of these people talking to me in between my Pokemon catching.
Hey, Alex, I have some news for you. You can go into the menu and like turn down like the amount of times that they talk to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's like a setting. I haven't tried it, so I don't know how much it works or like what it affects exactly, but there is like a setting where you can turn down how much they talk to you like between missions and stuff, I think.
Well, I need one of these for my personal life, just a human interaction slider.
Damn.
Like, just turn my boss down as low as it'll possibly go.
Also, Alex, if you have not, you can turn up your camera speed and your pointer speed, and boy, that really changes the game.
Oh, yeah. I did that after, like, I think it was whatever the flying mouse Pokemon or rat Pokemon is, flying Molga. Squirrel Pokemon. It like went by me like 6 times in a row. And I'm like, okay, I need a bit faster on the reflexes.
Oh, the I found the motion controls honestly solved that problem for me very well.
Oh, I'm not using motion controls.
That's fair. I have found the motion controls. I was initially playing with the joysticks, but I've actually found their motion controls to be a superior way to play that game because it's just much easier for me to like navigate around. It just feels way more intuitive. Like it's just like you're moving a camera. You like hold it in front of your face and move it around like you would a camera to get cute shots of cute Pokemon.
Just like Splatoon. It's wonderful.
I found the surfing Raichus, which were absolutely delightful. I have to say that that's the thing this game has done for me is like, I've hit a wall like twice with it where it's like, okay, I'm just going back through these same courses and I'm up to the volcano now. But it's like, oh, I'm going back through this all these same courses, taking pictures of largely the same things, hoping that, like, oh, this one will be slightly better in the professor's eyes, even though I've taken far more artistic photos that he does not approve of. So that I can get the research level up and unlock new biomes. But there's always, like, occasionally when you level up your research, when you get your research level up or something happens in the background of the game, where you get to a point where it just triggers something new happening. And every time that happens, it just totally reinvigorates.
It's so good.
My enjoyment of the game. And it was like the Raichus were like that. There was a moment in the reef when the Wailord surfaces.
Yes.
That was just fantastic. Just a lot of really like great stuff like that. The way the Pokemon actually interact with each other in the wild is really cool. I don't know. I am just like deeply, deeply enjoying this game.
Yeah, it's perfect, I really did not expect. 20-minute like jump in, jump out.
Oh, I played it in bed for an hour the other night. I was just like, I should go to bed, but yeah. I can do one more Pokemon Snap course. And then I, you know, unlock something. I'm like, well, I have to see this, and then that happened, you know, a couple more times.
I don't remember if I told you this, but a way to help make sure that you like get your score up for like unlocking new stuff or unlocking new levels is to always submit a picture, even if it's not any better than pictures you've already taken, because that contributes to your overall experience points or whatever.
Also, sometimes the pictures I submit that I think are shit get a higher score than pictures I submitted that I thought were
also
great.
True.
Yeah, it just, the scoring system is so arbitrary. It's like I do not care about it in the slightest.
Yeah,
but it is kind of annoying that it just like the metrics are, is the Pokemon in the middle of the frame? Is the Pokemon looking at you? Because I got this great shot of like a Tangrowth like gazing up at the stars, and it was just so, I don't know, it was so well crafted from my perspective, and I was like, this is a fantastic shot.
Yeah.
Really, you know, it says a lot about society. And then the professor was like, nah, that shit sucks, throw it out. There's this other zoomed up picture you have of its eyes and its nose that's way fucking better.
Well, and it's like,
do you know about photography? You're a fucking
professor,
scientist.
Exactly, like, he's not there to, He's not there for the art. He's there. It's very utilitarian with him, where he's like, I want to see as much of this Pokemon as I can for research studies. So as much as you have your artsy shots, that's not his his goal as much as it is your goal, right? And he's marking you based on that.
Yeah. Well, I'm more of an artist than a scientist.
No, I know. I know.
Well, for your artistic photos, that's where the online part comes in, where people can like give you kudos and whatever on your your photos that you upload.
Yeah. Well, mostly I just send them to my sister and she goes, "Oh my God, that's so cute." And day in and day out gets closer and closer to buying Pokemon Snap for herself. Yeah,
it turns out Pokemon are cute and having a game where you can take pictures of them is like it's a wonderful thing. I haven't seen any like, because in the old Pokemon Snap, there was a thing where you could like evolve Pokemon by like.
That's not in this game.
Throwing them in lava or whatever. Okay, yeah, that's what I figured.
It's kind of interesting. I looked into it and there's not like an official reason, but one of the speculated reasons is that Pokemon Snap, the original, was made before Pokemon had such a like strict adherence to like the internal rules of the Pokemon world. And so like the way that you would evolve Pokemon in the previous Pokemon Snap often involved like hurting them, and I think it's possible that one of the reasons that they did not include this is because like throwing a Charmander into a volcano seems kind of mean.
I'm sure they'll be fine, they're fire lizards.
Yeah,
but
you can get a Charizard.
I've seen a clip of a Pidgeot plucking a Magikarp out of the water. And well, let me tell you,
that's the circle of life, baby. Like, look, I see your point, but it's one thing for Pokemon to be like interacting in a way that's kind of harsh with each other versus like you, the human player, doing things to harm Pokemon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've also seen a golem have so many apples thrown to it, it falls off a cliffside into a pit of lava.
Which is, you know, it's cool that that can happen.
I have nice done that, so I
like
can't
it is on rails, but like you can still kill a golem, which is wonderful. I was talking to Jean-Luc about this, but I would be very surprised if we didn't get any future DLC, whether it's levels or Pokemon or some sort of evolution stuff.
I would also be kind of surprised if it didn't get some DLC. Like, I don't mind because like I'm enjoying the base game, and even though I haven't like 100% anything, but like I've beat the main story part, and I'm going through and leveling up all my courses. But like I feel like I would be fine with just the base game existing as it is. But I hope there's DLC.
Yeah, and I feel like it'll be free because it's like an $60 game. Well, $80.
Here. Well, I mean, they released DLC for Pokemon Sword and Shield that was paid, but it was like $40 for like two new areas.
Yeah. Also, this is Nintendo we're talking about.
I don't know, think they do
the free like, DLC.
Like with Splatoon, they add new like maps and stuff, or like. What's the other one where they added a bunch of free content?
Well, Animal Crossing gets a bunch of free updates.
But to be fair, the seasonal updates have always been a part of Animal Crossing. And both times with Splatoon, it sort of felt like an obligation because neither of those games, when they shipped, had enough content to justify the $60 price point in terms of like even Splatoon 2, which has like a good single player mode. Like most of the maps were recycled from Splatoon 1. So there was like pressure to actually make those games good.
And I'm
good
not sure
value.
If Pokemon Snap has
enough. I love Splatoon 2.
Like, I know you guys mentioned it last week. I'm not sure if Pokemon Snap has enough to like, oh, is this exactly a $60 game? But like, I'll definitely get, I think, my hours worth out of it playing
it. Oh, for sure. Like, I mean, I've spent $60 and played games for less amounts of time than I've probably spent playing Pokemon Snap.
Yeah, it would just be nice if there was like, hey, here's an arcade mode, or here's something else. It's not just like thing, but I don't know. We'll see. They're cute.
We should probably move on to something else, but I just want to say one last thing, which is that I hope that when they release that Pokemon game that they teased that looks sort of like an open world game, that is a sort of like Pokemon Snap mode where you can just walk around areas of the map with a camera and watch the Pokemon interacting with each other.
That would be nice.
Pictures of them. That would be fantastic. I would like that a lot, but we'll see what happens in the future with Nintendo. But I'm glad that, you know, this game has seemed to bring a lot of happiness to us in these trying times. Chad, what have you been up to aside from getting jabbed in the arm?
Oh, I don't know. It's been a pretty normal last week.
Yeah.
Are you guys, did any of you ever get into Digimon?
No.
No.
Oh, I mean, I watched the anime when I was, you know, 12 or whatever.
Oh, to completely railroad, but not completely. Chad, have you ever, like, looked at how much your Pokemon cards are worth?
Yes.
Okay.
Some of them are actually worth some money. Like, I got a couple cards that are probably worth anywhere from, like, 50 to 150 bucks.
Nice.
I think the whole collection I could probably... I bet I'd snag about a grand for it.
Damn. You shouldn't say that on a podcast. Someone will come to your house and rob you at some point.
I saw a really good ad that was like a... I don't know if you guys are familiar with Mercari. It's like a reselling app. And it was a binder full of Magic cards. And it said Magic on the front. And it had a sticker of a Charizard or a Charmander. And someone had drawn in like marker, like a circle cross out over the Charmander to be like, these are not Pokemon cards. These are Magic cards.
These are for adults. See, I'm kind of in the same boat because one of the binders that I used to use for Magic cards before I bought, you know, higher end merchandise materials to store my cards in,
of course,
was an old Pokemon binder that I had tried to scrape the stickers off of multiple times. So I am very sympathetic to that. That rocks.
Nice. I like that. That picture Emily just said.
Oh, I sent the picture of the ad to the group chat. I ask about Digimon because I've been watching Digimon Season 3, the objectively best season of Digimon, Digimon Tamers.
I remember, I definitely remember Seasons 1 and 2.
This is the one with Renamon, the sexy fox Digimon. Chad?
Never saw this one.
I
saw the first two.
I just assumed that if you knew anything about this season, it would be the sexy fox Digimon.
How dare you make that assumption of me?
How dare I make that very true assumption about you? But I've been watching it in Japanese because I watched it. And it's my favorite season, and I watched it. I've watched it a couple of times in English, but I finally decided to buckle down and watch the original because it was dubbed in the early 2000s, which means it faced a lot of cuts for content. But the reason that this season is the best is because it was written by the guy that wrote Serial Experiments Lane. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of that anime, but it is well regarded and often spoken among like the likes of Evangelion and stuff like that. So I'm pretty excited to find what the original version of the series holds for me.
I remember really liking season 2.
Season 2 is good. I love season 2.
And the ending to season 1 was really sad. And I was like, I didn't know cartoons could end sad. I am a child. I have been shown a terrible thing. And then the season 2 showed up and I was like, oh, they're back. And then I never saw anything after that.
When my wife was watching when my wife was watching Dragon Ball as a child, they didn't know that like it was pretty routine for characters to come back. So when Goku died for the first time, they were devastated and like cried for real, like a lot over the death of Goku.
Goku dies in the original Dragon Ball?
Dragon Ball Z, not Dragon Ball.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, because, like, that motherfucker dies a lot, but I didn't realize they were off him as a kid, too.
No, I meant Dragon Ball Z, but I was being lazy and left off the last letter.
How dare you? That's the most important letter in Dragon Ball.
Technically, yes.
I'm proud of that joke. Thank you for laughing, Alex.
Got you.
Man, I've been doing fucking shit this week. It's been a normal-ass week.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, sometimes I'm productive, I'm making my way through draft 2 of a book, and
nice.
I've been napping a little more, which is cool.
Naps are great.
Yay! How have you played any more Beat Saber since last episode, or?
No.
Ah. Well, then I don't have anything else to say.
We did go sailing in VR chat. That was pretty cool.
Oh, my goal is to join VR chat tomorrow.
Oh, that's a good goal. But we can take you sailing.
Yay!
Are you gonna play Come Sail Away while you go sailing?
I could. I didn't think about that. Sailing's kind of neat. If you fall off the boat, you get eaten by a shark.
Yeah.
Just like in real life.
Yeah. Which is like both really kind of funny and charming, but there's still like a very like visceral physical reaction to it as like this giant shark swims up to you and opens its mouth.
Not to bring it back to Pokemon Snap, but there are some times when like Pokemon will be swimming right at you if you're in like the underwater portion of the reef. I don't know if either of you guys have unlocked that part, but yeah. Sometimes like the Sharpedo will be like swimming right at you and it's very scary.
It's kind of terrifying, yeah. You can get some great pictures though when that yes. happens.
But it's just like, damn, dude, like this thing really looks like it's going to eat me.
Did we talk about Pokemon Snap last week?
Yeah. We but did,
Alex wasn't here.
Oh.
So we had to talk about it again so that Alex could, you know, say his piece on it.
I was going to cut most of it, but you keep bringing it up again.
Pokemon and Snap. Also, there's been 30 minutes of content.
Yeah. At this point, it'll just... That's the titles. It's about Pokemon Snap.
Again.
That was the title
again.
Last week.
Oh, it will be again then, because maybe we'll get some of that fucking SEO.
Oh.
One SEO, please.
Yeah. Alex is also... Alex was out last week, too, so we didn't get to talk about the new Star Wars television show.
Oh, the bad...
Oh, my other favorite
the
topic.
Bad Boys. The Bad Boys.
Hold on, what? I don't... Okay, so I didn't know there was a new thing coming out, and then I keep seeing people talk about The Bad Batch. Can someone tell me what this is?
Yeah. So, The Bad Batch is an animated show airing on Disney Plus from a lot of the creative... people, talent who worked on things like Clone Wars and Rebels and Resistance.
Sense.
Yeah, it's like, it's in a lot of ways more of a sequel to Clone Wars Season 7 than it is to, like, it takes place right after Revenge of the Sith and picks up sort of in the transition period from the Republic to the Empire and follows a group of clones called the Bad Batch who are... a squadron of defective clones who...
Oh, I love this already.
They were purposely given defects by the Kaminoans so that they would have, like, you know, specialties, and they could do cool stuff.
Chad, have you ever seen Kung Pao?
Oh, yeah, movie fucking rules.
We taught him how to fight wrong on purpose because it's funny.
Again with the squeaky shoes.
Anyway, John,
they taught these guys how to fight right on purpose because they fucking
that's another
rock.
Movie that would probably give Jean-Luc cancer.
Yeah, I mean, it should. It's I love that movie, but it's not aged well.
Yeah, like a lot of movies you like, I think.
Most comedies, I would say, at minimum.
Yeah, but anyway, it debuted on May the 4th, and then it's a show that's airing on Fridays, but May the 4th is on a Tuesday, so... We got two episodes last week and one episode this week.
We sure did.
And the first episode was basically like a kind of like a movie. It was an hour and 15 minutes, so kind of like four episodes, I guess, so far. But I thought it's so far, I've got to say, I think it's like a really, really strong sequel to Clone Wars. These are characters who were introduced in an arc in Clone Wars season 7, and an arc that I thought was kind of boring. and that there's like, oh, there's these cool badasses. That's fine. They look cool. I'll buy the Lego set when it comes out.
But I won't like it.
yeah. But the new reintroducing them in this series has been fantastic. Because I think they are a lot stronger as characters in, you know, in their own spinoff where, you know, the art, they're not showing up in a show that is like primarily about Anakin falling to the dark side, which was what that arc was primarily about. They're actually like given time to breathe and be characters. And there's a lot of really good stuff that comes out of that. Also, I just love this time period. I know that there's already a decent amount of content that happens in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. But this specific moment, I think, is super interesting. Politically in the Star Wars universe, like as like the Republic doesn't exist anymore, but the Empire really only exists in name. It hasn't like really sorted itself out. It hasn't become the Empire that we see in A New Hope. And we see a lot of that. So a lot of that being put into motion in the show. That's really, really cool. And I've been really enjoying it. And I've watched every episode with Alex.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see it because it basically picks up right like the first episode that happens right when Order 66 happens. Yeah. And you get all that fun fallout, you get Jedis dying, and yeah, it's just like Jean-Luc said, it's these characters that I didn't care about at all in the Clone Wars, and now I'm like, oh, like I actually like them. I actually like their sort of archetypes, and like there's the strong dumb guy who's got big himbo energy. There's the guy who's like,
and
really
is in
smart.
Love with the sniper guy.
He is in love with the sniper guy.
I maintain
guy,
this.
But the sniper guy's gone bad, so. And there's like,
it's not
the,
his fault.
There's like the tech guy who's like really smart, but maybe his social skills aren't all that great. And
do you
like,
want to guess the nickname of the tech guy? No.
I tried to think about it for a second, but literally nothing happened in my brain.
It's tech.
Yep, you know, I was going to say that, and then I was like, no, that's too stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, good old tech.
Sorry for clipping the mic there, Chad.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's enjoyable, and like there's the Bad Batch, and there's like this Boba Fett clone who's a female, it seems like, and she's got this thick New Zealand accent. That's she's like the kid, and they're like, we don't know what to do with kids. We're clones. Like all we've done our whole lives is like, you know, fighting wars, and they're like trying to raise this kid as like a group, and it's
really oh cute. Man, okay, you've sold me. I love a group of inept adults trying to raise a child.
Yeah. A family can be four dads, their daughter, and their evil and her evil uncle.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm sold now. Actually,
it's really good, and it's really easy to get into. I mean, there's like references and stuff to the Clone Wars, but not anything that I think would, you know, prevent you from enjoying it if you're interested in watching it. Also, I think the animation is gorgeous and like really even a step up from.
Is it still
the last
that like
Clone Wars?
The 3D?
Yeah,
sort
it's
of
the
like-
same.
Chunky style. Yep.
It's the exact same style as Clone Wars, which I think that they iterated on and got really good at doing by the end of it. There's obviously some rough patches early
that makes
on
sense.
In the run of Clone Wars. But this is even like, this feels like even a major, major step up from where they were at, even like when they made Season 7, which came out like just last year.
Hell yeah!
So I've really been enjoying it.
Well, that sounds
which
great.
Which is nice. Yeah, no, it is great. I think you should watch it if yeah. you're interested.
I will definitely think about it because I do I do really love this idea of a bunch of clones trying to take care of baby clone.
Yeah. No, it's very good. Very good. Cool. Well, I feel like we're probably at the point where we should start talking about comics if we don't want to go super long.
I don't think either Chad or I has anything else to add, so.
Nope. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Oh, wait, I started watching a superhero show on Netflix, so I'm the only one who's done that.
The Jupiter whatever show, or was it something
Jupiter
else?
Ascending?
No, not Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, no, not Jupiter. I do this all the time with this comic. Jupiter's Legacy. The Mark Millar
is that on Netflix now?
Wait, hold on. Yes. Is that a comic?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, that's fair because it released 6 issues over the course of like 5 years.
Oh,
yeah. It's a Mark Millar and Frank Quitely.
Oh, ew! I almost was gonna watch this.
I've heard really bad things about it.
What did you watch, Alex?
It's called The Neighbor, and it was like I was talking to Jean-Luc before the show and chat, but it's like a Spanish show that's on Netflix, and season 2 dropped today. So it was like it was on the banner, and I was like, oh, I'll check it out. So I watched the first episode of season 1, and it's about this like 20-something guy who's like really selfish and immature, and he's like in a relationship. And then he gets superpowers, but he's not the only one to get superpowers. It's also like his girlfriend who just broke up with him because he's too immature to do anything. And he's super unlikable, but the cast around him is very likable. And yeah, and like he has powers, but like he can fly like 3 feet in the air. Like he's got really shit powers, and he's got like super strength, but like. It's like either way too strong or like not strong enough kind of thing.
He's like so. All the dog shit X-Men that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And like it's like a manifestation of him as a person where like he has powers, but like doesn't quite hit it. And it's been one episode and yeah, it's been pretty good. I'll probably watch more before next week.
If I had the power to fly, but I can only go 3 feet in the air, that would still be really useful if you're like, oh shit, there's a big puddle in the road. Oh, I'll just fly over the puddle. Like I don't have to get my shoes wet. This is great. Like, there's a lot of utility there that, yeah, you're not gonna make headlines, not gonna go save someone from a burning building. But I think as a quality of life upgrade, I would be totally fine with that.
I would rock to be able to hover. Yeah, that would be, even like 1 foot above the air would be great.
Yeah.
You could do some stuff with that.
It's just kind of interesting.
Unless it didn't work over water, that would be annoying.
Works everything but over water.
Because you know you would find out the hard way, because you'd fall in the fucking water, get wet.
Yeah. Oh, it's just like expectations for superpowers are so big, and then you get like small superpowers, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess. Like the end of the episode is him like trying to fly, and he finally like flies a bit, and he just like flies through a guy's window, and he's like, hey, and the guy's like, please don't kill me. He's like, I won't. He's like, look at my superpowers, and then he breaks his arm. He breaks his own arm to show that he can heal, and then he doesn't actually heal. And his arm's just like broken. He's like, oh. And that's where it ends. So, yeah. Pretty good.
Speaking of shitty superpowers, what if you went to summer camp and found a coin that gave you the power to become a slasher villain?
I fucking loved this comic. I will not listen to any slander against this issue of Silver Coin.
This is, yeah, Silver Coin.
Dumb as fuck.
Oh, yes. And it rules.
No, it
absolutely so rules.
Fucking boring. It's like, oh, look, everyone's a villain. She gets the coin, kills them all. That's your catharsis. And it's like, neat. Yeah. I haven't seen this fucking
ruled.
Before.
Yeah. And the great thing about it is that they did that as a one shot and then it's done.
Yeah.
And it's like a very brief, like, this person had a shitty time at camp. She found the silver coin and became fucking Jason and went sicko mode on them. And it's great. Like, I mean, obviously, like, it's like, it's not like particularly complex or deep. The characters who bully her have seem to have like no personality beyond bullying her, but it's like such a classic. It just like oozes classic slasher tropes, and it looks so fucking good. The kills just rock. Like when you get to the last few pages of this book and the one girl gets a machete through the back of her mouth, the decapitations on the next page are just, it's just like that exact like level of like gore and violent catharsis, cathartic violence that you would want out of a slasher film. It's so good. I absolutely adored this.
I had no emotional reaction from this at all. It was just,
but you don't like slashers, so that's not a surprise to me.
I don't hate slashers, but it did absolutely nothing for me. I think if she hadn't like been like, oh god, like upset at the end, and was more like, ah, fuck him, I'd have been like, yeah.
Okay, admittedly, yeah, I think that also would have made for a better ending.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't think that would fit the concept necessarily, because, like, the purpose of the silver coin is that it makes you do things you wouldn't otherwise do. Like, I don't think that the character in the last issue would have felt, actually, he might have felt good about burning down that shitty club that he felt like he was stuck in. He might have been okay with that.
Yeah.
But I do feel like it possesses you to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do. And this isn't quite as, like, a deep use of the concept as the last issue was, but it's really fun.
Like,
and
I liked it up until the end where she's like, oh no, what did I do? And I was like, oh, like, I don't know. That moment for me didn't work, and I understand that it's like the coin, that's like the point of it, but I was just like, I was hoping it would just end and she'd be like, how was summer camp, honey? And she was like, you know what, it wasn't bad, mom, it wasn't bad.
That would have been a great ending.
Yeah, I feel like it could have ended a bit differently and I would have liked it, but because it ended the way it ended, I felt like there was really zero payoff other than, oh, the bad characters got killed, which, yeah, the gore was nice, but I don't know, like it really was just, It felt like a very skippable issue, just like nothing really happened. And it has me a little concerned for the next couple, because it's like the first one was really cool and I really liked how it was handling being obsessed and stuff like that. And just like this guy was an asshole, but he was willing to like, you know, destroy his ideals to be a famous musician. Like I feel like he was a pretty complex character and there's just none of that in this. It's just like, no, we did a slasher thing.
Is this the one that Jeff Lemire was writing the last issue of?
Yeah, Jeff Lemire is, yeah. The next one is Ed Brisson. Ed Brisson. I always want to pronounce his name with a French accent, even though I don't know if it's actually pronounced with a French accent. I don't know. I think, like, all of that stuff is, like, totally valid that you didn't like it for those reasons, but I don't know. I thought it was, like, I think that, like, this is a totally good thing to do with stuff like this. Like, not everything has to have that same level of depth as the last issue did, even for as much as I loved the last issue, and you know, I didn't like this one quite as much, but like I thought that it was really, really fun, sort of because it has a lack of substance to it that I, you know, sometimes you enjoy stuff like that when it's like when the craft is there and it's like really well drawn and really well written, it works for me at least.
Yeah, I just I just enjoyed it as just like a one little one shot slasher. I thought was nice. Like, I like a slasher movie, and I thought like all the kills looked great, and like the, I just enjoyed it. It was a good run.
It's one of those things where like probably having a month between the issues like makes it feel a little weirder that like, oh, these are like very different. But if you're reading a horror anthology, like, you need stuff like this to break up some of the like more serious psychological stuff to a degree.
I definitely agree with that, because I had to like go back and look at the previous issue to be like, wait a minute, I don't entirely remember all this.
Yeah, like, because if this gets collected in trade, like, and the next couple are, you know, much more akin to the first issue, then it's going to feel, I think it'll, like, the flow of that will be, that collected edition will be really nice.
Yeah.
But, and that'll do it for Silver Coin, I think. Sticking on the Image train, and I guess sort of also on the number one train, this was number two technically, but there was a new Image number one this week called Time Before Time.
You said it was technically a number. Oh, no, you meant the other comic. No, I meant
the Silver Coin was technically a number two, but yes. It's a standalone. So, so Time After Time, written by Declan Shelvey, who is, I don't know if this is his first time writing, but he's usually an artist slash colorist. He's done a lot of art and coloring on both Image and I think a lot of Marvel work as well. And I thought that it was he co-writes this with somebody else, Rory something. It's an Irish last name. Rory McConville. What'd you guys think about this number one as a new series?
I like the concept a lot. Like, I think it does a good job of establishing it at the beginning where people are like, hey, we want to go to a different era. And it opens really strongly with like a mom and her kid. And it's like, oh, like, they're brought back to 1987. And he's like, oh, what's the Wi-Fi password? And it's like, and the guy's like, oh, it's 1987. There's no Wi-Fi. And he's like, what?
Not that for 10 so years? That was so funny. I really enjoyed that little bit. I mean, I enjoyed this whole comic, or this whole issue, but that really got me.
It's a really good opening.
Time travel, and like, the opening was great. Time travel is something that I'm either really on board with, or I'm like, oh, fuck, it's a time travel book.
Extremely think, mood.
Yeah, and this one is really doing interesting stuff with it. There's a lot here that I liked. It is a slightly oversized issue at like 40 pages.
Mm-hmm.
But it uses the space well. I like the characters. I like the concept and like this weird kind of shady business this guy's working for. It just, hey, our customers want to be taken to a different timeline or a different time at Earth, so because they're escaping something. And like, the one dude is like a fucking serial killer, and he's like, oh, they can't find me 200 years ago. And it's like, oh,
true,
I suppose, but that's a little not good there.
Yeah.
And then when the one dude gets like captured, but finally gets to back to his own timeline, but like his whole life has passed. Like, I kind of figured that reveal was going to happen, but it was still like really well executed.
Yeah.
Just like seeing him super old and like in this wheelchair, and he's got tubes coming out of his face, like
where he's like, "So what's new with you? I've been waiting forever to use that line."
And the next panel is so good of the main character just with his jaw dropped. It's just a great page of like that 1-2 punch of those two panels.
Yes,
yeah, it's a really strong like the world concept is really strong. That like, oh, they live in a time period that sucks, and it's such an intuitive use of time travel. Like, people would just buy their way out of the timeline if they're able to.
I really prefer this to a lot of ways that like time travel stories had tried to incorporate that concept.
Yeah. And then the two friends, brothers, boyfriends, I can't really tell what their exact relationship is.
They seem to be very close co-workers.
Yeah. Also maybe roommates. It seems like they live together.
Oh yeah. Maybe so.
I got that impression at least, but they get
let's
the idea
say
in their head.
Boyfriends.
Yeah, let's say boyfriends. They get the idea in their head that they can steal one of the time travel devices, and it all sort of goes wrong where they get pulled into these different things. And then, like Chad mentioned, you get to that reveal that is just really the timing on it is so good. Because I don't know, like maybe this was just for me, but like as they were going through it, it felt like just as I figured out the reveal was when the page turn happened.
Yes, for me too.
It's so perfect because he goes into the future and he gets captured and they're like, oh, we brought him back. That's how we knew what happened. And there's like then there's these four panels of him or five panels of him saying describing what happened. He's like, yeah, I went there. I spent a couple of days in prison and then I had to go through a trial. And then I spent a couple of days in a detention center waiting. And then a war broke out. And then the war breaking out, that's like the second to last panel. And then the next one is like, yeah, so the war ended and I went back to finish my jail sentence. And then all of a sudden it sort of clicked for me and it's like, oh my God. And that is just like so fucking well constructed that they would like orient that in that way that makes it work. It just makes it work, right?
Yeah.
Because it'd be very easy to like, okay, I've figured out the reveal on the last page, but we're still going with this fucking life story. Let's, you know, speed it up a little bit. But this book doesn't do that. It everything about it just feels like so perfectly timed and lands really, really well.
One of my favorite parts, like, is actually like in the lettering, the way they do it. It's like the main character is talking to his friend who's now like, you know, in a wheelchair and about to die. And he's like saying like, you know, it'll be okay. And the other guy's word balloon like overlaps it kind of thing. Where like this guy's saying like the sort of standard, like kind of like you don't know what to say kind of thing. And you're kind of just saying bullshit. Yeah. And it's overlapped as being like, I knew you'd say that kind of thing. And it happens a couple of times in the issue. I think there's one other instance where they use the word balloon overlaps, like cut people off. And I thought that was really good.
Yeah. There's another really great art sequence. Where it's earlier in the issue where he's trying to make the case for stealing the time machine or the time capsule or whatever. And they're walking along the street and each one happens in what looks like a different season.
Yes.
And on each page, they're just like a little bit further ahead on the street. And it takes like a fishbowl sort of perspective where every panel is like curved. So you really get the effect of them walking down the street and almost like a loading bar of this guy being convinced like, no, we're not doing that. No, we're not doing that. You know, you're making some compelling points and then fuck it. Let's do it. This shit sucks. And it's kind of great in that way too, that it's like very like, it's very subtly about like those like feelings of alienation and like living in a way that like your life feels like it's like not going anywhere. And it's all like, it all is just like so subtly in there where like clearly the storytellers are way more concerned with like this like sci-fi plot and like this FBI agent that shows up at the end. But like so much of the thrust of the through line of this issue is like these two guys have a job and it sucks and they're stuck doing it because they have to. And they just want to do anything to get out of it. So this issue really was a fantastic start. And I just want to show it. Joe Palmer is the guy who did the art and is just fantastic. Got a great like noir style to it as well. So
I will say before I move on, there's a lot of really good world building in that scene too. Like if you really pay attention to all the details in the background, the graffiti on the walls, the news headlines, it is a great way to like really build this apocalyptic kind of consumerist hellscape of a future.
Yeah. Reminded me a lot of the opening scene of Children of Men, or not like the opening scene, but that scene where he's on the bus and they're like driving through the city and you see all the like headlines on the television monitors. It kind of works in the same way here. But yeah, really, really, really solid first issue of this book. So, I know we've got a lot of books to cover. So is there anything that people really want to talk about in case we don't get to them all by the end of the runtime?
I really liked this issue of Carmen.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I've been kind of iffy.
I said that questioningly, but so did I.
I've been feeling kind of like up and down on Carmen. Like, I've never disliked it, but it's always been on like a little bit of shaky ground. But like this issue, like really, I'm like, really, I really like it.
What changed?
I liked the introduction of like a little bit more world building for like the titular Carmen and like the world that she seems to exist in. I also something that I've just been thinking about with this comic is like it's got a lot of nudity, but I really appreciate that it's not like, I don't know if I've said this, but I really appreciate that it's not always like sexy nudity. Like, the main character, like, she's got skin rolls, and, like, her boobs are, like, you know, they flop up and down, but not in, like, a horny way. Like, they just move the way that, like, sacks of fat and salt water on your body would move. And I don't know, I just appreciate that, like, the naked bodies in this book actually, or the naked body in this book actually kind of looks like a normal, like, naked woman body. Yeah. And not, like,
it feels like it sort of goes out of its way to not be sexy. Yeah. Where it's like, yeah, like, it's like, okay, this woman committed suicide and she slit her wrist in the bathtub. She probably wouldn't have slit her wrist in her bathtub fully clothed. Yeah. But just because our protagonist is going to be naked, well, until she puts clothes on in this issue. If our protagonist is going to be naked for a significant part of the book, like, that, it doesn't, it's like, it would really undermine the gravitas of, like, what this book is about if they were constantly like, damn, look at her hot titties and look at that ass. Like, it's very much not that.
I started to notice last issue, but really just, like, was something I was thinking about while reading this one, is that, like, I appreciate that we're not, as the audience, we are not, like, invited to ogle her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very, I feel like it's a very, like, European comics thing.
Yes. Where,
like,
yes.
It's sort of a result of, like, you know, it wasn't taboo throughout, like, 70 years of making comics to have naked women in your comics. So there wasn't, like, an immediate temptation as soon as you could do it to be like, you know, make them as, like, sexy as possible. And for that to be, like, so such a defining part of putting women in your comic.
Yes, absolutely. Also, I really liked the design of the, what was her name? Carmella, the other girl.
Yeah, Carmella.
I liked that in contrast with Carmen, instead of having
bones. Carmella DeVille.
Carmella DeVille. Carmella
DeVille. I like that she has, like, the circulatory system instead of bones. I thought that that was kind of a neat, like, I want to know what other people in her position are, like, what their costumes look like. I thought that it engaged in some world building, and do we know how many issues this is?
I think it's 5.
Yeah, it's 5.
Because I was feeling like it was probably going to be pretty short, but I don't know, like, this just really sold me, like, or really cemented the positive feelings I had been having about the comic, so I'm interested in seeing how this all plays out.
Yeah, I'm glad, that's awesome.
Did you guys read the other Guillaume March book, The Joker?
Oh, fuck, I forgot to read Joker.
I had a lot of fun with this issue.
I forgot to read it. Tell me what happens.
It starts off, and it's basically James Tynion being like, yo, the Killing Joke is pretty good. It's pretty good.
Okay, shocker. So... No. So, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Finish what you're saying.
And that's not in, like, a... That's not a critique. It's genuinely, like, okay, like, it's an important part of his life, and, like, the idea that the Joker is just always in the back of his mind, and, like, that kind of stuff. And, you know... Jimbo's just on this adventure to go find the Joker, and he, you know, knocks on a few doors, talking to some locals, and then eventually he knocks on a door, and the Joker's like, hey, let's team up, because there's a bunch of people here to kill me, and, you know, you're here, so you may as well. Let's go. And it's, I love the energy, the way that the Joker just, like, takes over his day, takes over his plan, like, that force of chaos that just, like, and Jim's just, like, standing there, like, I don't know what the fuck to do. I came here to kill this guy, and he's still alive, so I enjoyed it.
That tonal whiplash is so fucking good, because the issue is, like, really brooding, and Jim's just like, oh man, when I picture the Joker not going through, like, his weird Pennywise shit where he's like, every 10 years he's gotta destroy Gotham. He's, like, just sitting there with his eyes vacant and dead until something clicks over and then he becomes a serial killer again. And then the Joker's just at the door and he's like, hey, it's my good friend Jim.
That sounds, like, very intentional.
It was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I really
liked it.
The Joker just has, like, this massive smile on his face. It's like, it's, and there's a little, like, it's a full page of the Joker, like, opening the door. And then there's, like, a smaller panel carved out of it of Jim just, like, with no idea how to respond. Like, just, like, totally taken aback. His eyes are, like, wide. He's like, what is happening? And then he's like, we're just gonna chill out and we're gonna kill these fucking mercenaries that are coming for
it's
me.
It's great because like it like as much as the first part's like dark and everything, it's all about how like the Joker like has just such an impact and like effect on him, and like he just, you know, he wants to kill him or like to take him out and everything, and then the Joker's just, you know, fucks up his day again. So
yep. I do have to say, I mean, so I did really like this issue. It's kind of bonkers that like I was not sold on the first issue and then so very sold on these last two issues. I really didn't like the Killing Joke part of this issue, largely from a meta perspective of like what my reading on the Killing Joke has always been, which is that it's the end of Batman and the Joker.
Yeah. Killing Joke in continuity is a weird thing. Because, like, it does seem like Batman kills Joker in that book, so it's like, yeah.
And I get that the whole purpose of Future State is that, like, or whatever they're calling this pseudo-relaunch, is that, like, writers can just do what they want, like, and decide what they want to count as canon and what they don't want to count as canon, and so they're not bound by those restrictions. I just dislike this interpretation of Killing Joke here. But yeah, I think this issue overall is really, really solid. I'm way less interested in like the shit going on in Gotham. It was nice to see Stephanie Brown, but like,
Brown was in this. I love her.
Yes, yeah, she rocks. I don't really care about like them find the Court of Owls mystery. But yeah, the Jim's investigation I thought was really good too. Like, it's a lot of thought bubbles, but it plays out like a montage. So it's not like it works in the sense of like, yeah, this is like the Ocean's 11 montage or whatever, where it feels like it would be out of like an Ocean's movie or something, where they're like, you know, it's a bunch of shots of them talking to the locals and figuring out what their plan's going to be. And it sort of works in that way. And then obviously we've talked the ending of this book to so death, good, which yeah. is fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm really glad. There was a point where I wasn't going to read the second issue of this, and I'm really glad that I did, because it's been a weird turnaround where this book is absolutely not what I expected it to be.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else you want to hit on? I think we got time for one or maybe two more if we're really.
I want to quickly touch on Wonder Woman. It's probably my least favorite issue of the run so far. It was just like a lot of side stuff, but I'm still. The place where this issue ends, I'm back on board, but it just felt like a very inelegant way to like get there. A lot of talking, a lot of like, here's Dead Man, there's a mystery, that kind of stuff. And I just have been enjoying the Norse stuff that's been going on a lot more.
Yeah, I like this issue. I felt like there were like there's like a lot going on in it though that feels like it could have used some more time. Like a lot of it, like the part where she goes back to fight. With Thor, feel like it ends very abruptly. The Dead Man scene ends very abruptly. The scene where she sees like the shadow version of herself ends very abruptly.
Yeah,
it's a lot of like, and there's like a lot of good stuff in there. I think, mm-hmm. like a lot of those like conversations that she's having are solid. The like the fight scene with Thor is fun, and well drawn. But
it's also like super comic booky though. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
There's a point where like, there's kind of a neat mystery going on. I like the setting. And then like the fact that it is a comic book sometimes gets in the way. Like I thought it was kind of dumb when she went to like fight with Thor and they had this like almost Marvel style quip exchange or whatever. And it's like, really like the other issues are better than this. Yeah. Like, this one's not.
And like, I really like the opening where she's breaking out of the sort of Hydra or whatever it is, the snake Nidhogg. Monster's belly. Nidhogg. Yeah, the Nidhogg. And then the middle lost me. And then at the end, I'm like, okay, I'm excited for the next issue.
I love the title page. I have to say that. I think that it's great. Like, she just comes out and she's just like happily trotting away from the Nidhogg with the key in her hand. I think it's just like a really good, like, yeah, you got owned type of page. But yeah, I would agree that this was like the weakest issue of this story so far. I don't think that's wrong at all. I also want to touch on Justice League Last Ride number one really briefly, just because it's a number one and I feel like we should, and it's a decent one. I know Chad didn't get around to this, but Alex, you read this. Emily, did you get a chance to?
No, I did not.
Okay. Alex, what did you think? I sort of talked at you about my thoughts on it before the show started, but what did you think?
It's a fun book and it is like getting the band back together type thing, and there's a lot of cool moments, and we talked about it a bit before the show, but it does some great Superman stuff where, like, someone's fighting Superman and they fill the Daily Planet globe with kryptonite and, like, throw it at him, and it's, like, a wonderfully silly moment that I really liked, and Chip Zdarsky writes some good jokes, and yeah, I mean, like, it didn't blow me out of the water, but it was a good first issue, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I liked so much of it, and then it feels really undercut by the core concept of, like, the Justice League has been cut off from one another for 15 years or whatever, and now we have to bring them back together so they can protect Lobo from being killed by all his enemies. And I'm like, this is a little boring, but the first few pages had a really, like, the Superman stuff at the beginning, like you said, had a great impact, I thought. I think there's, like, a fucking amazing panel of Superman flying.
I'm sorry, an amazing what?
Panel of Superman flying? What did I say?
You said panimal.
Oh, did I really?
Yeah, it's a panimal canal.
Panimal. Okay, well, I was probably talking way too fast. But yeah, I think there's a lot of good stuff in here in terms of, like, yeah, I think it's, like, quite well written. I think the art is really the reason to read it, though. I thought that the art was on the whole really, 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 really good. And the rest of it was, like, fine. Inoffensive, I should say. I don't want to be too harsh on it because I feel like it's not bad by any means. It's just that I don't care about Lobo at all.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was decent.
Yeah.
It's another Chip Zdarsky book that was, you know,
decent.
Probably about the quality of most Chip Zdarsky comics. I hate putting it like that
because, like Chip Zdarsky,
he's not a bad writer, but, like,
he's a C-tier writer and an A-tier artist, and sometimes he you know, brings those together.
Yeah, he's written some great stuff, like that issue of Silvercoin. With the first issue of Silvercoin was phenomenal, but this was, like, it was fine. I enjoyed it, and I'll probably read the next issue because I like reading comics, and as long as they're not awful, I'm fine with spending 10 or 15 minutes of my time reading them.
Yay.
Speaking of not awful, are we going to talk about Proctor Valley Road?
Oh, shit.
We can.
Did anyone else read it?
Yeah, no, I did.
Yeah, of course I did.
Yeah, it was great. It was.
Yeah, I like this comic. I consistently liked all issues of this comic so far, and this was not an exception.
Yeah, and there's some great one-liners that are, like, so corny, but they're delivered so earnestly by the characters. Like, when she's, like, holding the bull's head, and she says something along the lines of, like, I'm getting ahead or something, and it's like, ah.
Oh, kid. Yeah, that was really good. Like, normally I kind of roll my eyes at puns like that, but she was so triumphant, I just really enjoyed it.
And there was another one in the library that I don't remember what it was, but she was talking to the librarian and said something of similar effect. And
there's some good quips in this book.
Yeah. I would say, like, the horror stuff is probably the weakest part of this book. Like, I think it's good, but, like, the stuff I saw in this book, it wasn't scary. It was more, like, cartoony, and that's fine. But, like, I feel like we've lost a little bit of that edge.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that.
Totally, it's trying to be Stranger Things, right? Like, it's not trying to be, like, a...
Yeah, but it's not, but trying Stranger to Things has you, some, really, like, scary, you know...
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, yes, it does. This creature design, and yeah, it does.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
Yeah, I like this issue as well. I think it's really carried by, like, the personalities of the characters, because the structure of all three issues has been exactly the same. And this was the first issue where I was like, okay, do something. But the thing is that, like, the characters are really fun to spend time with, so it almost...
I'm sorry, do something. Matter. She killed a Minotaur.
Yeah. It was fine. I don't feel like the plot advanced, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, they killed a Minotaur.
I mean, a little... No, it was mostly world building, I guess.
And like, they found one of the kids' bodies. The principal probably dies, too, but it was like a... It was, like, stuff that happened sort of off-camera,
That scene in the principal's office is fantastic at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. And, like, the character dynamics are fantastic. Like, it's the reason to read
the book. Yeah, they're the reason to read the book. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just really like all these kids, and I'm in for their adventures.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely, like, the star of the show. Like, Jean's point is valid, that it's like, yeah, the plot hasn't moved a lot much in the last couple issues, but I really like the town they're in. I really like these characters. I really like just the dialogue and just hearing them hang out is really fun. And so I'm totally fine with the plot just kind of meandering or going however slow it wants to, because the ride so far has been just really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's good shit.
Yeah, I'm not trying to detract from the book. I had a lot of fun reading this issue for sure. Cool. Well, I think that will do it.
If we go any longer, Chad's going to be very mad.
Exactly. So I think we're going to wrap up there. You know where to find us on socials and everything. And I just have something really quickly that I want to say at the end of the show. I know that we spent the last hour talking about Pokemon and comic books, so totally it's kind of a whiplash. But before we sign off, I just want to say my heart goes out to all the people of Palestine and Gaza and the West Bank. I have nothing but solidarity with our brothers and sisters who live there and are, you know, killed indiscriminately every day, and even more so this last week by the Israeli military and the Israeli settlers. And I have nothing but the absolute utmost, like, admiration for people of Palestine. And inshallah, the day will come soon where you get the dignity and freedom from Israeli oppression that you deserve.
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine. Solidarity with Palestine. Thanks for listening, everybody.